and welcome to another edition of Animates, where we bring you stories about animals and the different ways we interact with them. This program is recorded in the studios of 2RPH Sydney for the RPH Network. I'm Sarah Hewson, and today I'll be talking to May Dodd. May is a psychiatrist who shares her life with abandoned and mistreated donkeys at a shelter in Tongala, Victoria. Here she combines donkey care with her patient care in a way that offers support and emotional benefit for both. May, thank you very much for being with us today. As I said when I sent you the email, if you wouldn't mind starting at the beginning, I find your whole background so interesting, with not only the donkeys, but the way you have adapted the rescuing of the donkeys to the psychotherapy. You got your first donkey. Her name was Molly, I believe.
Yes, exactly right.
And was there a reason for Molly, or was it just that you happened to like donkeys at the time?
Well, you know, at the time I had 6 dogs, 2 cats, a goat, and I thought, I'll get a donkey as well. Why not?
Yes.
So I went and from a breeder, but of course, unwisely, I knew nothing about donkeys. And then when I started to do my research, it became clear that she would outlive me, basically. And so I started to look into what I could do with her when I was too old or indeed dead. And when I looked into the welfare for donkeys, I could only find one place, and that was run by Christine Berry up in New South Wales in Maitland. And I talked with Chris on the phone and then went up and spent a few days with her. So we got on very well, and in fact, it was she who encouraged me to open Donkey Shelter down in Victoria. So that's how it started. It started with Molly coming to me and then me realizing just how long they do live and the need for welfare for her in the future. And that was in 1997.
And, well, since then, you now have 200.
Oh, I have more than that. I've probably done closer to 400 because I've been going 21 years now. I have 200 in residence at the moment, but I've got at least another 100 out in the community. And sadly, you know, the last 100 would have passed away over the 21 years.
Yes.
You know, either because they were terminally ill when they came in or they've aged over the 21 years I've been doing this.
So the ones that are actually out in the community, the role of the carers in the program, I understand people, you have a list of people who actually want to look after donkeys.
That's right. The only restriction to it is the travelling time, because unlike most other animal organisations, having said that, on par with what Christine Berry is doing in New South Wales, we never sell the donkeys, we always own them. And we do follow-up visits. And that works both ways. It certainly keeps a close eye on the donkeys. But it doesn't leave the carers stuck if there's a major disaster, either equine or human. But that process involves a lot of travelling, and so there's a restriction on where we will place them.
Yes.
Otherwise, we just spend our life on the roads. But in terms of incoming donkeys, there's no criteria whatsoever. We've been as far as Perth to bring them in.
Right, so the donkeys are there already and some go out and some, are they just a gist and are looked after on your farm?
The rest live here with me, yeah, and there'll be reasons that they haven't gone out. It's either because they've got emotional problems or they've got ongoing physical problems. It's the more stable donkeys, psychologically and physically, that are placed out into the community. And unfortunately, because of the nature of the work, they're not as plentiful as you might imagine.
The ones who don't have any emotional problems.
That's right. And I think it's because we're a welfare organisation. Sometimes we know the background from where these donkeys have come, but quite often, particularly if it's through the knackery or the stockyards, we don't know what they've been through. And if they have an anxiety problem or they've got ongoing medical issues, for example, really poor teeth, then at great risk of having bowel obstructions, those donkeys never leave Donkey Shelter.
Right. So the ones that are there, I noticed in one of the articles that you had done that you were studying your equine psychotherapy. Did you pursue that?
That was something that kind of came about really by accident, I suppose, without giving it a formal title. And then I was at a psychiatric conference in Brisbane in 2015, and there was a pre-conference workshop on equine psychotherapy, and I attended that. And it became clear that the thing that I had been doing informally for all those years was now recognized by the Royal College of Psychiatrists.
Yeah, I saw this with the human treatment using donkeys as therapy, that it's covered by Medicare.
That is exactly right, yes. And, you know, the irony is, my hourly rate is higher if I'm out in the paddock with the donkeys in the film. I'm in my office.
So what happens then when you mix your donkey therapy with your patient therapy? Do you call it an equine visit or do you call it a human visit?
Well, because if Medicare wouldn't actually recognise equine, but yes, it would be. And in fact, most of the equine work that I do as therapy, I should just explain, Jess, who's been with me for 11 years, is actually the equine specialist in the psychotherapy. I'm at the gatekeeper position. When patients come to me, I always consider, would they benefit from donkey therapy? So if you like, it's me referring the patients to the therapy situation.
You're involved with that, are you? With Jess? I mean, do you work with her?
No, I don't. I should explain that psychotherapy is a very, very general term. And basically, it divides into two types. You can either do interpretive psychotherapy, so that you, depending on the school of thought, either interpret the patient's reactions to the donkeys, or you do it the other way around. You interpret the donkey's reactions to the patients. Now, that type of psychotherapy is not part of my own psychiatric practice.
Yes.
Because I deal with biological illness, therefore I treat biological disorders, and interpretive psychotherapy can be quite risky in those situations.
Do you introduce many of your patients to the donkeys?
I would say maybe 5-10% of them.
And you find it works well?
Yes, I do. I do. So I should explain that the type of work in terms of psychotherapy with my patients is really supportive psychotherapy. So it's specifically geared towards issues of trust and self-esteem and confidence, which in the setting of mental illness, unfortunately, flies out the window. Mental illness being very different to physical illness in that it's not uncommon that people actually can't trust their own perceptions. And that completely undermines their self-confidence and self-esteem. So we're talking here in particular about schizophrenia.
Right.
These people tend to be very isolated in the community, but mostly because of poverty issues. They can't work, and so they're trying to live on a pension. They often look and dress a bit different, so people steer clear of them. They're a little bit of little bit afraid. And this is where the donkey plays a terrific role, because like all animals, it's unconditional positive regard. The donkey doesn't care whether you've got three legs or one eye or whatever it may be. I mean, that's just an exaggeration, but you get my point. They relate to the essence of the person. And that's the way we run the therapy, in a way, in that the donkeys choose the patient. We think that works better.
Right. And the donkeys that you use for this are the ones, I presume, that you've still got there that aren't suitable to be sent out to carers, because they have their own issues as well.
That's exactly right. Some people, and it's valid, will use animals, equines, with no issues whatsoever. But having said that, equines with issues can be just as beneficial because there's a common bond.
You have stables where you do this training in an arena, or where they meet up with the animals, or do they
meet? That's right.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's ad hoc and very dependent on the weather, because we're working out in the paddocks. The farm where I live has a dairy, which I've had cleared of all the equipment, but we're just waiting for funds to put the floor in, and then we can do the donkey therapy on a very much more consistent basis and expand the numbers. At the moment, we're in the paddock, so if it's too hot or it's wet, everything has to be shifted around.
Yes.
And so that limits the number of people. Because although I'm the gatekeeper for my own patients, other psychiatrists in the area are aware of what I'm doing, and they will refer their patients to me if they want them assessed for donkey therapy.
When they have the donkey therapy, I noticed that you say that it's an ongoing thing, so that it's not a one-off treatment, it's an ongoing calming therapy.
Well, that's exactly right, because you've got to reinforce the progress, otherwise the progress has a tendency to go back on you. So initially, the frequency may be fairly high, but when you're doing the more maintenance therapy, you can spread that out over time.
Do you have any anecdotes with people where in the past that the program has particularly assisted them?
This was just a by-chance thing. This was not a patient of mine. He was just a visitor. He and his wife came up to the donkeys, and one of our donkeys, Jasper, took a liking to this man and followed him all around the paddock while he was looking at all the other donkeys. And nothing was said at all. Jess and I thought it was a bit odd that Jasper should choose this particular man who he'd only met that day, but he did. Now, when they got home, the next day the wife rang me and she explained that the husband was legally blind. That's why she had done the driving. And Jasper had cortical blindness from dementia. How he knew, I do not know. But he did. There was a link there.
Well, it's the nature of the animal, as you say, the mutual respect, and people can sense what is going on.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, of course, it explains Jasper's behaviour. That's right.
Yeah.
So I think that's a lovely story.
Yes, I think that is a lovely story. And, well, the other thing you were mentioning is you're looking for your funding for your floor is obviously the very important question of funding. How do you fund the programme?
Well, the whole of the donkey shelter is funded by the general public.
Purely by donation?
Yes, that's exactly right. When we're a bit more able, we're going to look into the system of grants, because the financing of the floor would lend itself to a grant. But for the existence of shelter, it's solely donations from the general public.
Gosh, that's absolutely... I mean, 200, 300 more animals, that must be... How you manage it, I have no idea, with your practice as well.
Yes, I don't have much of a social life, I have to say. But I think it's important to realise, and sometimes the media can skew your perception on this, is we have to have animal welfare because of bad people. But we survive because of the good people. I think it's easy to get jaundiced and think that all of humanity is bad. That's not true. If that were the case, we would not have survived 21 years.
And the donkeys that come to you come from everywhere, from what I understand.
Absolutely. There is no criteria for admission whatsoever. You can be very young, very old, terminally ill, perfectly normal. It makes no difference. It's always yes.
And then some of them are born wild?
Yes. In recent times, up in Echuca, since 2013, we've had a number of wild donkeys go through the Echuca stockyards. And I have to say, prior to that, I've never had to take a wild donkey. They may not be very well handled, but they kind of know what people are. Whereas these donkeys are from outback Australia. So, you know, and their contact with humans in that short space of time wouldn't have been very good, being herded onto trucks and shipped down to stockyards. But, you know, the donkey's nature never seems to change. And those donkeys do come round very quickly. Not that I'd ever suggest that you'd have a wild donkey as a first donkey. You need a bit of experience and knowledge. But here, really, the wild donkeys have come on board almost as quickly as some from very bad backgrounds, because at least with the wild ones, you haven't got to undo anything.
Yes.
Whereas a donkey that has been physically or emotionally abused, the issues of trust take longer.
And you break them in yourself.
Well, I hate the word break.
Yes.
Well, it's got nasty overtones to it. We build a relationship with them, yes, so that we can do what we need to do.
So, in fact, basically, you're out in the paddocks all day, every day, with your patients.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, in some ways, I spend more hours of my time with the donkeys due to the sheer numbers than I actually do in the practice.
Yes.
I've got more control in the practice.
Well, in the practice at the moment, how many of your patients are actually going through donkey therapy?
Now, at the moment, there's just one in transit for donkey therapy. He's been assessed. I just need to go through the where's and the why fours with him. But in the past, I've had a number of people go through the donkeys, yes. And in particular, this is the other thing, I don't specialise in autism at all, but I've had a number of autistic children referred in, and they do very well with the donkeys.
We did a programme recently on alpaca therapy, and the autistic children responded very well with the alpacas as well. Because, again, of this unconditional love and respect on both sides.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's the key to any animal therapy, I feel. So it's dogs, cats, whatever works, you know. Wherever you can build that bond, that's going to work. But the donkey's nature is so conducive to working with people because they're much more like a dog than they are like a horse.
Yes.
So they're incredibly interactive. You'd have to go out of your way to avoid them.
And so the ones that are actually on the field, they recognise you, obviously, when you go out there. And you've still got Molly with you, of course.
No, that was very sad. Oh. 2 years ago, it was Australia Day. Molly had been in hospital at the Equine Centre in Werribee, University of Melbourne. She'd been there 7 weeks for psychogenic nerve pain in her left back leg. And just as the same as in humans, we don't understand how it arises, but it was so severe that she wasn't getting up to eat, and she dropped 20 kilos in weight. And the team there did absolutely everything, as you could imagine, over a seven-week period, including an epidural, and nothing could control his pain, and so I lost her.
Oh, that's very sad.
Oh, I was absolutely dead. 25 years I had had her.
Yes.
And the whole reason for shelter was
because of Molly, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right. Mm. But it took me a little while to get over that.
Yes. And do you have another one that's taken your place, or are they all just as important?
They are all just as important. I mean, in many ways, you see, Molly didn't need me. Other than this late onset with the pain, she had no problems with self-confidence at all. I was her servant, and that was the start and finish of it. You know, whereas the other donkeys are much more, I suppose, like my children, whereas Molly was actually my master.
Yes, all right. And you have visitors there? You have a lot of tourists?
Yes, we do, much more so. This all started in Diamond Creek, but of course we've moved up here, and not for this particular reason, but there's a lot of tourism in Echuca, and so we're busy with visitors now, more than we've ever been in the 20-odd years, which is good because it gets word out.
I was looking at pictures. You actually have a Facebook as well.
That's right, Jess does that, yes.
So perhaps that's a good thing to refer people to if they're looking to see what you do and the continuation of that.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. That's right. So far, so good, but it does need to go much further than it currently is. But as I say, for that, we need consistency of our own facilities, which we haven't got at the moment.
And run purely by donation. Is this something that you're looking for sponsorship from people? How do they do that?
Well, they could get all the information on the Facebook page, but if they haven't got computers or are like me, hopeless at using them, if they just give us a ring, we can go through the details with them. Yeah. Or email would be the other thing, but of course you need a computer for that.
And so the Facebook is Donkey Shelter?
Yes, if you just Google Donkey Shelter, it'll take you to it.
Donkey Shelter Tongala. I don't know if there's anything else you might care to mention that you feel would be appropriate.
Just that we need all the support we can get because it's an ever-growing concern.
Well, thank you very much for being with us today. Our listeners, if they're travelling down in Tongala or, you know, on route to Melbourne from Sydney or something like this, they can pop in and see you.
Yes, unless they go to Chris in New South Wales. We are the only donkey shelter in Victoria, so you can't see donkeys in these numbers anywhere else.
All right.
So they'd be very welcome. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks very much, May. If you'd like to find out more about the Donkey Sanctuary and you do not have internet access, you can contact May on 03-5859-1410. You've been listening to Animates. This program has been recorded in the studios of 2RPH Sydney, for the RPH Network. Animates was created by Joe Van Cool. Katie Brooks offers invaluable technical support, and Joseph Swanzer provides background research. We hope you enjoyed this week's programme. and that you will join our team again in 2 weeks' time for another story of animals and their human mates. This is Sarah Hewson thanking you for your company. Thank you.